So exciting to be here. One of my favorite places to come is Shalavim, so it's a pleasure for me to be here, and I love all the students who come from Shalavim in my classes, so it's win-win for me. It's really very exciting, and I want to give a shout out to Lauren Levner, relative of mine who is here, so cousin. So, you know, we even have a family connection. Usually one of my kids is in Israel. This is my first year in I can't count how many years, so we got some relatives. That's good, you know, to have someone here in the country. Okay, so we shall begin. We know we're in the season of the Arba Parshiot, right? We started Parshat Shkalim this past Shabbat, right? We add certain maftirs to the Kriya, and also they come with certain haftarot. The haftarah that we're going to be reading soon is the haftarah of Parshat Zachor. The Haftarah of Zachor is the story of Shaul, right, trying to defeat Amalek. We also read in the Maftir, before we, right, come to the Haftarah, we also read the Maftir about Mechiyat Amalek, which means Chazal have set up, we have this in the Mishnah, we have this also in the Gemara, Chazal have set up that we read Mechiyat Amalek in Torah, we also read about Mechiyat Amalek in Navi, with Shaul and Amalek, before we read Megillat Esther, which means you have to read Megillat Esther within the context of Mechiyat Amalek in the Torah, and also within the context of Mechiyat Amalek by Shaul, right, in Sefer Shmuel. Which means right away, when you read Megillat Esther, it has to be within a certain framework. You have to see it within a certain general context. And that will be very insightful and helpful for us today, because what we're going to be doing today is to read the story of Purim within the general framework of all the things that happened before in Tanakh. Which means, how does Megillat Esther, within its message and within its language, and then we're also going to see how Chazal interpreted, how we see it within the general framework of Tanakh. And we're going to see two things. Number one, among many, but two main things. Number one, we're going to see that when you read anything in Tanakh, you always have to read it within a bigger picture, within a bigger context. Number two, we're going to see that it also always has a message for us. A message for us about the Megillah, and a message that you could take with you today that you can also impact your life with. And that's going to be the message, the two messages that we're going to deal with, that we're going to deal with today. So let's already start. So we can start with the Pshat. And there's so many ways to discuss Megillat Esther. We're just going to do a few. And we're going to begin with the story of Mordechai. And we're going to discuss Mordechai and Esther. And then the interactions of Mordechai and Esther with Haman and Ahasuerus. So let's begin. When we are introduced in Megillat Esther to Mordechai Yehudi, we're introduced to him as we're in Esther Perek Bet, one number one. Right? Ish Yehudi haya v'shushan habira. Ushmo Mordechai ben Yair ben Shim'i ben Kish Ishimini. Right away when we're introduced to Mordechai, how are we introduced to him? He's a Yehudi, but also he's a Yemini. So what's the conflict here? Yeah?
He's from Shevet Yehuda and he's from Binyamin.
Right, he can't be from Shevet Yehuda and Binyamin at the same time. So right away we have this question of dual personality, of dual identity. In the Megillah. And we're going to see that who you are and what you stand for in Megillat Esther is very important. And the fact that both Mordechai and Esther have double names or double identities really says a lot to us. Because Megillat Esther is about who you are, who you want to be. What are the inner strengths that you have that you want to develop and you want to show out to the world? Number two, it also is telling us his background. Which means, are you your own person? Are you your own identity and who you are? Or are you really a representative of so many generations that come before you? And if you are a representative that comes before you, does that decide your destiny? Or do you have the free will, the ability to really change, right, how your history affects you and what is going to be your future story? Which means, do you have that kind of ability? And we're going to see in Megillat Esther, it's both. We are a product of our backgrounds and who we are, but we also take that and really make something for the future and change what we can do in the future. So Mordechai comes from Shimi ben Gera, and he also comes from Shaul HaMelech. Shimi ben Gera wanted to curse David HaMelech, right, when he was running away from Avshalom. So what's fascinating about Shimi ben Gera, he's from Shevet Binyamin, but he represented Shaul HaMelech. He said, David can't be Melech, really it belongs to the family of Binyamin. On the other hand, right, we see that Shaul's role was to kill Amalek. We're going to see, right, we all know that that was one of his jobs as Melech, and he doesn't finish it, which means by David not killing Shimi ben Gera, and by, right, Shaul not finishing Agag, Melech, Amalek, we see that both stories of David and Shaul will come to a head in Megillat Esther. So what does that mean? The next Gemara, number two, right? Masechet Megillah, Daf Yud Bet Amud Bet, is telling us that everything that happens, right, in Tanakh will play out at one way or another in the future, which means everything you do has impact, has ripples, has circumstances. Midah keneged midah. Everything has measure for measure. Everything has some kind of ripple effect. So the Gemara is really trying to say, because Shimi didn't kill, Shimi was not killed by David, Mordechai came from the Shimi family. And because Shaul didn't kill Agag Melech Amalek, Haman comes from him, because it's Haman Ha'agagi. And who is the king of Amalek? Agag. So these two things together come to a head in Megillat Esther. And the Gemara is saying, the way you read Megillat Esther, you have to look back. So in two ways we look back. Number one, we look back because the Haftarah. We read Megillat Esther already reading the story of Shaul and Amalek. And we also, in the Megillah itself, the Gemara is saying, when you look at everyone's background, you have to see how that affected how actually, right, the stories in the Megillah really transpire. So let's start with the main story. What is it telling us, right? In number three, Pasuk Vav, Perek Bet Pasuk Vav, we see that Mordechai is part of the Galut. He's part of the people who were exiled to Paras, right, to Persia, and he's in Shushan HaBirah. What does it mean to be in Galut? It means to be powerless. It means to be left. It means to be bereft. It means not to be in your own country, right? So by telling us that they're in Galut, which means that Mordechai is not empowered at this moment. Bnei Israel are not empowered at this moment. In Pasuk Zayin, right, it tells us about Hadassah Esther. What is she? En la avaim. What does it mean that you don't have a mother or father? You're an orphan. What do we know about an orphan? What do we usually think about them? They're also
lost.
Lost, right? They are the ones who are needy. Geri Yatom and Almana. We always speak about those individuals as disenfranchised, which means we're saying Am Yisrael is disenfranchised, Mordechai is disenfranchised, and so is Esther disenfranchised. She doesn't have parents. Who really redeems her? Who takes her as a child, as a daughter? Mordechai. So what is Mordechai doing? In his own small way, he's bringing a little geula. He's redeeming within the family. He's taking Esther as a daughter, which means even in this issue of galut, everyone feels like an orphan. What is Mordechai able to do? He's able to be a father to Esther. But what do we want, really, from the story of the Megillah? We don't want redemption just within the family. What do we really want? Redemption for all? For all Am Yisrael. We want some kind of tikkun for all Am Yisrael. So we see that the Megillah starts just with one little corner, right? But not something that is really national, on a national level. And what do we know about Hadassah? Right, we know that Hadassah is also called Esther. And the Gemara also says something very interesting here. We're doing number 4 and 5 right now. We're on page 1, and again we're going to the Gemara. Right, we want to see how does the Gemara read the Megillah, and we're going to see how the text of the Megillah itself really sees it in this way. What are the different ways we call Hadassah? Right, either she's what? Al Shem HaTzadikim. So what's one way we could look at Hadassah? What is she? She's a tzadeket, she's righteous. What's another way we could look at Hadassah? What's the next idea in the Gemara? Al Shem Shehaita Masteret Dvareha. What does Masteret Dvareha mean? She's hiding her words. Which means, what do we know about Esther in the beginning? What is she? Passive, quiet, right? She's taken everywhere. She doesn't say anything. Mordechai tells her not to say who she is, right? So we don't know who she is. She's hiding her words, right? How do you know about somebody? By their actions? And by their words. And with Esther, we don't know anything about her. We don't know what kind of person she is, right? So that's why we could say either she's a tzedeket or she hides her words. What's the next view in the Gemara? Hadassah, just like the Hadass branch. When you take the Arba Minim, when you take the Lulav and Etrog, right, you have four species, right? What's considered the average one among them? What's the average one? The Hadass. right? What's the tallest one? The lulav, right? What's the one that really smells beautifully and we say is, you know, we don't say the bracha because it's not the biggest, but we know you have to pay a lot of money for it and take very good care of it? The etrog, that's the pri etz hadar. So, and what do we know about the aravot? Where, what in the, you know, pantheon of arba minim, where does that fall, the arava? The most important or the least important? The least. So where does the hadas fall in? Average, to the middle. So what is the midrash saying? What is Esther? She's average. She's like a hadas, she's like middle. You know what I mean? She might smell good, but she doesn't look that great, right? She's average. Which means, again, so far, what are we seeing in the midrash? We have so many different views. Either she's a tzedeket, right? Or she's average, right? Or what is she? She's hidden. We don't understand her. We don't know her. And what's the next one? What color is she? Just like a hadas? She's green. When we were introduced to her in Pasuk Zion, what did it say? She's yifat tor v'yifat mareh. She's beautiful. How could you be amazingly beautiful and have green complexion? Right? Except if you go to Wicked, right? But what is she saying here, right? She's saying here, right, the Midrash is saying here that it's not your outward appearance that's important. She could even be green, but chut shel chesed mashuch aleha. What does that mean, chut shel chesed? It's the way she behaved, her inner grace, her inner beauty. That's what counted about Esther. We don't even know much about her, but every time she's described in the whole Megillah, after we're introduced to us, she's introduced to us and we're told that she's beautiful, everyone is attracted to her because of her actions. She just has this chen, she has this chesed, but it never says, oh, people picked her because she was yifat tor v'yifat mareh. There was something about her that was unusual, her inner beauty, her strength, her elan, her grace, that chut shel chesed, that's what was special about her. So what is interesting, what's the aggregate notion here from the Gemara? I mean, the fact that we can have so many different views tells us what about Esther? She is unknowable, which means when we are introduced to Esther, she is hidden, she's unknowable. She could be the biggest righteous, the greatest, or she could be average. She could be green, but she has great action. She's every woman. She is a person with unlimited potential that has not been tapped yet. In the beginning, when we speak about her as an object. Every time she's discussed, she is taken, she is brought. Right, what's going to happen to her? Mordechai tells her not to speak. We don't know anything about her. She doesn't take action. She doesn't take an active role. And that's what the Gemara is trying to tell us, which means she's every woman. She could be anybody. And that is in the very important message for us that we're going to see throughout the Megillah, which means we can all identify with Esther because there's something about her that really can identify and connect with all of us. And the message of Esther is that everybody could step up in their own way, whatever their, you know, greatness is, or whatever their special, you know, talent is. That's how a person can develop themselves, as opposed to, oh, I have to be the loudest, I have to be the most charismatic, I have to be the most unusual. Which means everybody has something. And we're going to see that one of her hallmarks was she was quiet. She was tsanua. No one knew her. Which means that kind of quality is also something that could be harnessed in an unbelievable way. And that's the second part of this midrash. So the first part is saying she's unknowable, she's every woman. Everybody could be like her. The second part is saying, Bizchar tzniut, we're still in the end of number four. Bizchar tzniut shayta ba berachel, zachta v'yatza mimena Shaul. U'bizchar tzniut shaya bo b'Shaul, zachta v'yatza mimenu Esther. Which means, on the one hand, the first part of the Midrash is saying, it's all about her, her qualities, who she is, what she does, what she doesn't do. It's all about her. On the other hand, it says, all of us, as we said earlier in the Shaul, are really a product of our backgrounds, of our families, of our communities, of our environments. Which means, and what kind of environment, what kind of lineage does Esther come from? She comes from Rachel. What do we know about Rachel and her sister? What didn't she say when Leah went in? Right, she let her sister go in. She didn't say anything to deter that, and she gave Leah the simanim. So, a symbol of quiet. What do we know about Binyamin and selling of Yosef? Who's the one of the brothers who didn't say a thing in the whole story? Binyamin, right? Binyamin does not speak in the story. Right, what else do we know about Shaul? Whenever we describe Shaul, what are some of the descriptions that we use for him? Nechba, Ela Kelim, when we talk about Shaul HaMelech. What else do we say about Shaul HaMelech? Good looking. Mishichmo v'mala gavoa mikol ha'am. What else do we say about him? When everyone was criticizing him, what was his response? Vayihi kimacharish. He's quiet. Which means a lot of things about Shaul is his quietness. Is his tzniut, right? And that's a very big hallmark that Chazal always tell about Shaul. And what do we know about Esther the first time we meet her? And in all the stories until Perek Dalet?
She's
She's quiet, right? She's passive, right? She does not really step up. On the other side, what do we know about Mordechai? Mordechai, he really exhibits the personality of Yehuda. What do we know about Yehuda, especially in Sefer Bereishit? What parsha really shows us his strength? Vayigash. Vayigash elav Yehuda. What else do we know about Yehuda in Sefer Bereishit? His bracha, ata yoducha achecha, right? You are going to be acknowledged by all your brothers. But another thing is also interesting about Yehuda. Yehuda always took responsibility for Binyamin. So there is some kind of connection. But Mordechai is really like a Yehuda type. He steps up. He's always, you know, pronouncing, right? He's the one who won't bow down to Haman, and that has almost catastrophic results. And Esther is quiet. But why is she quiet? Because that's what Mordechai told her. Now, one last thing of this Gemara. We're on number 5. The last two lines. Va'amar Rabbi Elazar, kshakoresh baruch hu posek gdula la'adam, posek levanav v'livnei banav ad sof kol adorot. This Gemara is saying that if in your lineage somehow there's greatness, and what was Shaul HaMelech? He was king. But even though he lost the melucha to David HaMelech, what will always stay within the family of Binyamin, with the family of Shaul? The ability to be what? And the potential for what? For greatness, for malchut, for kingship. Which means if Esther and Mordechai want to reach for the brass ring and they want to really show and envelop themselves in malchut and kingship, they still can. Because once you have that potential, you always have that potential. It's latent within your family history. So we know that when Esther is described, look at number 6, always in passive terms, right? We spoke about it. I just want you to see inside, right? It's all over, but I bought one big chunk. We see in number 6, Pasuk Chet, we're still in Perek Bet, Vatilakach Esther, she's taken. When we speak about Esther, look at Pasuk Tet, Vatisa Chesed Lefanav. When everyone sees her, they always see her Chen, Vachesed. But she doesn't say her nation, she doesn't say anything about her background, because Mordechai commanded her. And whenever he goes to check on her, he wants to see what people will do with her, what's happening with her. And she is taken, right, to King Ahasuerus, which means everything really are passive verbs and passive descriptions. So now we come to the question, right? Now when Mordechai, right, doesn't bow down to Haman, and Haman decides that he wants to destroy Am Yisrael, what is the language that's used? Look at number 7. Lahashmid laharogu la'abed et kol ha'yudim. Destroy everybody. Absolutely, cause massive destruction. Minar va'adzaken, young and old, right? Women and children. And what can you take? What's the last two words? Ushlalam lavoz, which means not only can you kill everybody, you also want to take the booty. Which means one of the main reasons that Haman wants to destroy Am Yisrael is a personal affront. We see his personal kavod is very important because Mordechai won't bow down. But he's not just doing it on principle to destroy the Jews. What does he want to take when all the Jews are destroyed? He wants to take their booty. He wants to take their money. Which means for Haman, the destruction of the Jews has two points. Number one, to destroy them because they disrespected him. And number two, because he wants the shalal. And it's a lot. We know they live in 127 lands. Where does this come from? Now, we're going to see that this idea of rechush, of being so focused on materialism, is something that really spans in Sefer Bereishit when we discuss Lot. Why do Aram and Lot have to separate? Because of the rechush. They have so many possessions that what does Abraham say to Lot? Hipared na me'alai, separate from me. So we know Abraham, Lot, the rechush is a problem. But look at another pasuk. We're now in number 8. When Yaakov and Esav have to separate, right? They have to separate for many reasons. One of the reasons is because there are too many possessions. So Yaakov and Esav cannot stay together. But not only Yaakov and Esav can't stay together, even the brothers, Esav has many children, all the brothers cannot stay together. Why? Because they have too many possessions. Look at Perek Lamed Vav, we're on number 8, page 1, Pasuk Zayin, Ki haya rechusham rav mishevet yachdav. Why can't they live together? Because they have too many possessions. Who are we talking about now? Not Lot, right? We are talking about the sons of Esav. All the sons of Esav have to separate because they have too many possessions, which means money will separate the kids of Esav. Amalek, look at the next psukim. Who is Amalek? Amalek is a grandson of Esav. So let's get these parallels straight, right? We have Yaakov, right? We have Binyamin, we have Mordechai and Esther, including Shaul in there. On the other hand, we have Esav, Amalek, and Agag, Haman. Which means these are long lines, as we saw the Midrash is saying and we see in the Pshat, right? These are long lines really fighting against each other, and each one stands for something else. Hakol kol Yaakov, v'hayadayim yidei Esav. Right? It's ideas versus materialism. Right? On the other hand, we have something else. We see that Bnei Yisrael, the Shvatim, all sat together originally. Right? They all stayed together. And when Reuven, Gad, and Chatzi Shevet Amnasheh said they want to be on the other side because they have too many possessions, was Moshe upset or happy about that originally? Disappointed, because possessions shouldn't separate you. The Shvatim, all the brothers of Am Yisrael, all stayed together. And in Goshen, they all stayed together, because money never separated Am Yisrael. And yet with Esav, with Amalek, what do we see from the beginning? That's very important. And not only that, what is the symbol of Esav? Al Charbacha Tichyeh, living on your sword. Now we know that we also have Milchama. But when we do milchama, always included with the war are religious ideas. Is the idea of tefillah, is some higher calling. For Esav, his bracha was al charbacha tichyeh. And also, you'll have material wealth, but not like Yaakov. Right? Yaakov received a different kind of bracha. So what we see here is really almost a war between two different ideals. And as a result, we're going to see that when Shaul had to destroy Amalek, look at number 9. When Shaul had to destroy Amalek, what did he have to make sure? What kind of war is this? A religious war. This is a war of ideals, not just a war, right, to destroy a nation just for, you know, no reason. And we know that Mechiyat Amalek is such a difficult concept to understand, right? What does Shmuel tell Shaul? Look at number 9, Pasuk Gimel. We're in Shmuel, Perek Tetvav. He says, Lech v'kita Amalek. You have to destroy Amalek. But what do you have to do to the possessions? What's v'hecheramtem et kol asher lo? What? It has to be put in cherem or destroyed, but it cannot be used. When you fight against Amalek, what can't you take? You can't take the money, because what is it going to show? That you're doing it? It'll be misinterpreted that why you're destroying them? For the money. Right? We saw that with Haman. When he says, Ushlalam mavoz, we know that one of the ulterior motives is to get the money. So it's not a war on principle. And what else? This is very difficult for us to understand. It says, Velo tachmol alav. What can't you have for Amalek? What's lo tachmol? You can't have rachamim. Now that's a very hard concept for us to understand, because what do we always say about Bnei Israel? We're rachmanim, Bnei rachmanim. Our hallmark is rachmanut. Our hallmark is chesed, right? Esther stands for chesed. Abraham stood for chesed. So for Bnei Israel to do this war and not to have rachmanut is really almost against everything that we stand for, right? But this is a special tzivui, and what does he have to, what is the destruction? Me'ish va'ad isha, me'olel va'ad yonek, mishor va'ad se, migamol va'ad chama. Who does it sound like? What did Haman say about destroying Bnei Israel? Everybody, women and children, right? Everybody. What do we see here? What was Mechiyat Amalek? Everybody in the same way. The language is identical, but what's the big difference? Right? The big difference is the idea of the shalal, the material goods. But turn the page. But something else is going on here also. Right? When it happens in the Megillah, it's almost like an echo of what was written before. And as we said, we always read this story with Shaul right before we read the Megillah. This is the Haftorah of Shabbat Zachor. So we see something else here, which means when you're in this kind of situation and you have doubts, what's the famous doubts? What are the famous doubts that Shaul had? What's the famous Rashi, it's number 10, on Vayirev Banachal, right? What was going on with Shaul? What was he worried about? What's the whole issue of Egla Rufa?
It would be his responsibility for killing them, and that he wouldn't be able, that like he was going to make it a korban and make a Kiddush Hashem out of it.
Okay, right, what do we see here? He's wondering, in Am Yisrael, when we find a dead body, a corpse, in the field, and we don't know who killed it, right? So what do you have to do? You have to do a whole ceremony of Egla Rufa. The leaders have to wash their hands, and that's for one person. So we have so much rachmanut and respect for the dead, for one person, that we do this whole ceremony if we don't know who killed it, because that shows that society is not moral. So Shaul is thinking, you're telling me this for one person, and now you're asking me to destroy a whole nation? So if Shaul has those doubts, and that's what the Midrash says, Shaul had those moral and ethical doubts. If he had those doubts, then what should he have done? Asked whom? Asked Hashem. Asked Shmuel. I need some advice. right? But instead, what does he do? Tell me what he does. He goes out to war, and look at the psukim. Who does he kill? Everybody. Kol ha'am hecherim. What should he have done? What should he have hecherim officially? The possessions. But instead, who does he destroy? The whole nation, all the people. Implying whom also? The women and children. If he really had doubts, right, he should have asked a question. But if he doesn't ask a question, at least what should he have done? Right, not kill the women and children. But he kills the women and children. Who's the only one he leaves alive?
Agag.
Agag. And what is Agag? The symbol of the nation, which means the epitome of Amalek. What does he do? He leaves him alive. And not only that, what does he do with the possessions? He takes them. He takes from the shalal. And not only does he take from the shalal, he only takes the expensive things. And all the rest he doesn't care about, which means what is he really interested in? The materialism. He wants to give it as korbanot, absolutely. Right? But still, what did Hashem say? It should all be destroyed, which means if you do it against Dvar Hashem, it's meaningless to say I brought these korbanot for Hashem.
Wasn't he supposed to kill them?
What? He was supposed to. But if we're saying he has moral and ethical questions, then he should not have gone ahead and killed them and then left the other people alive because he had a moral and ethical problem. Meaning, if it really was truly moral and ethical, then at least what should he have done?
Ask.
Ask or... Right? Leave the women and children. I'm saying from his point of view, if he's already not doing Dvar Hashem. Do you understand? To prove that at least it was for those reasons. Not only that, what do we see? What is Shmuel's answer? He says in Pasuk Yud Aleph, he says, what's so important here? Hashem tells Shmuel the Navi. He says, Pasuk Yud Aleph from number 11, Ve'et Dvarai lo hikim. He didn't fulfill Dvar Hashem. And not only that, so what is happening? Shmuel cries out to Hashem the whole night. And Pasuk Yutet, what does Shaul do? What does he go after? It says it very clearly. Vatat el hashalal. You went after the money. Which means, because Shaul did not do anything on principle here, he leaves Agag Melech HaMalek alive. He takes from the booty. He doesn't listen to Dvar Hashem. He also doesn't own up to it, because when Shmuel comes, he said, I did Dvar Hashem. Hakimoti at Dvar Hashem. So what happens is, Shaul loses his melucha. But not only does he lose his melucha, what does he also lose? His reputation. Which means all of Shevet Binyamin and the entire Shaul family will always have to be known as what? The family that did not destroy Amalek. That did not fulfill their kingship. So now going ahead, what do we see Esther has to do? Mordechai has to do? They have to do a tikkun for the family. They have to fill in the gaps. They have to make sure that the reputation of Shaul will have some kind of continuity. So everyone has their own way of doing things. What is Mordechai's way, right? When he hears this terrible decree, right? And he feels terribly responsible because he's the one who's not bowing down. So what is Mordechai's response? Number 12. What is Mordechai's response? What does he do?
Starts mourning.
He goes into what?
Mourning.
Avelut. How do we know he goes into mourning? He tears his clothes, Vayikrat Begadav. What else does he wear?
Sak
va'efer. And what does he do? He cries out. So we already saw Shmuel cried out. Vayizak zaka gdola umara. Now already by this early description, when he cries out, what kind of crying out do you think he's doing?
Yeah.
He's yelling, right? Now he's on the verge of what two things? Zaka is tefillah, but because we know how he's dressed, what kind of zaka is it also?
Pain.
Disappointment, thinking the end is near, right? It's really mourning. And when do we only mourn? Only in Avelut, when someone has already died, which means the implication, even though he's also davening and crying out, what's the implication here? What does Mordechai think about the future of Am Yisrael? It's over. Where else do we have that? First, let's see the corollary. What is happening in every single Medina? Look at the next Pasuk. What's the message Bnei Israel are getting from what Mordechai is doing? In all the spread out lands, what is happening? Right? Evel, what is Evel? Mourning. In the first pasuk about Mordechai, what did it just say? He's wearing sackcloth. But what's the message everyone else gets that sees him? Mourning. They're for sure getting the right message, right? Next, what are they doing? Tzom, they're fasting. Bechi, crying out. So they are davening. But what's the next thing it says? Umisped. What does a hesped mean? When's the only time we do a hesped? Right? Only after someone dies. Right? We only do a hesped after someone dies. Right? Does everyone know the famous story with Samuel? Clemens, who is Samuel Clemens?
Mark Twain.
Mark Twain, right? There was a rumor that he was dead. So they wrote this amazing obituary about him in the newspaper, right? And what does he say? The only time you write an obituary, you say those kind of wonderful things about someone is only after what? Right. So he said, the news of my death is definitely premature. Which means, if it says in the Megillat Esther, right, that we are doing hesped, so what is the assumption? What is everyone seeing? What are everyone seeing or understanding that Am Yisrael is finished? They're already saying a hesped for Am Yisrael. Where else do we see that you could be crying out, but you're already assuming that the person is dead? What happens with Hagar? What does Hagar do? Right? Batashlech et hayeled achar achad asichim. Harchek metachavei hakeshet. She throws the child, right, under one of the bushes. As far as you can shoot an arrow, what does she say? Vateshef lo mineged. She sits from afar. Vatech. She cries. And what does she say? Al ereh bemot hayeled. So what is she doing? She's crying, thinking he's going to die. And that's why, whose tefillah, whose cry does Hashem hear? Vayishma Elokim el kol hana'ar basher usham. Why? Because she's already given up. Right? So b'chi can also be given up. You know, you want, you're doubting that things should change, but your attitude is, you know, you're almost despondent. That's what was with Hagar. So what is the message B'nai Yisrael are getting from Mordechai? That this is, right, almost the end, and it can't be turned around. What do we see in Bereshit? Who else cries this tza'aka gdola umara when he realizes that his chance to get a bracha is lost and Yaakov took it? Esav, right? Look at number 13, right? When Esav hears that Yaakov received the bracha, he cries out a tza'aka gdola umara and he asks, oh, did you leave me also a bracha? And yeah, Yitzchak gives him a bracha, but not a complete bracha. So, again, what do we say in Tanakh? Everything that happens later is a corollary with something that happened earlier. Which means, even Bnei Israel, right, will have to cry out, and Mordechai has to cry out, for what he did, what Yaakov did to Esav all those years ago. In a sense, there has to be some kind of balance. There has to be some kind of undoing here. But what else we see here is that everything in Tanakh is connected in balance. Haman does his decree because of what happened with Amalek. Mordechai has to cry out, right? Because Esav cried. So what are we pretty much at? A stalemate. Which means it's almost like a power from this side and a power from this side almost pushing against each other, and we don't know how the destiny is going to move. What's going to shift the balance, as we say? What's going to be the tipping point that we can really go on one side and now Bnei Israel, right, are going to move towards the side of redemption? So we have a very interesting Rashi that's quoting the Midrash. What are the three ways that we usually deal with Esav? What are the three things you have to do for Esav? Look at number 14. You all know this, right? We know this is elementary school, right? It's one of the best ones, right? It's classic. What are the three things that Yaakov does when he meets Esav, right? Esav is coming with 400 men, and Yaakov is... Good. Some people went to preschool, okay? So, on the first thing he does, Yaakov's davening, right? He does tefillah. What else does he do? Milchama, he gets ready for war. But what's the third thing that he does? His presence, right? What's the one way to make sure you can get to Esav's heart? What did we see was dividing Esav's family, that they all had to live in different places? The rechush, which means rechush, money, is so important to Esav. Materialism, the idea of kavod, the idea of the chitzoniyut, is so important for Esav, right? For Amalek, is that that could be the deal breaker. That is something that can tip them over. Now look at Shmot. Right? What are the two things Moshe and Yoshua do when they fight Amalek? First time out. When Amalek comes, Asher Korcha Baderech, what are the two things Moshe and Yoshua do? Number 15, what are the two things? Tefillah, and he raises his hand, that symbol of tefillah. What else does Yoshua do? He goes out to fight. So we have two out of three. Right? Two out of three ain't bad. We have two out of three. We have tefillah, and we have milchama. Right? So what are Bnei Israel able to do during the time of Moshe and Yoshua? What's the last pasuk there? Pasuk Gimel? Vayachalosh Yoshua et Amalek. What were Bnei Israel able to do in the Midbar to Amalek?
Weaken them.
But what were they able to do? Destroy them completely. Also, what was missing was Shaul when he went against Amalek. We had the war, right? But what is he missing completely there? Tefillah. We have no tefillah by Shaul. Shaul should have done an unbelievable tefillah for Hashem right before he fights Amalek. We saw already in Chumash that's what you need. So at least you should have done the two things that we found with Moshe and Yoshua. So what's happening here is we see you need some other kind of modus operandi. You need some other kind of ammunition. We need all these three things together to work against Amalek. And where we're going to see all these three things is going to be the genius of Esther. And that's why we call it Megillat Esther. Usually when you have a book in the beginning, in the middle, the end is mentioning an individual, then we call it on that. Who is mentioned in the middle, the beginning, the middle, and the end? And we say all those psukim aloud when we do Kriyat HaMegillah. About whom is it?
Mordechai.
And yet, what do we call Megillah? Megillat Esther, because she changes the destiny. She's the one who changes the whole story. She's the catalyst. She is the one who brings the Ge'ulah. And that's why Nashim are Chayavot and all the mitzvot of Purim, because Afen Ayu Botones. And what is the view of the Rashbam? Not just Afen Ayu Botones. What are we? Ikaranes. We are the main reason for the Nes. And who is that? That is Esther. And as we said before, she is every woman. She could be anything. It could be any one of us, really, in a sense, right? Who could have brought that Ge'ulah? So what does Mordechai say? What is his plan, right? So what is Mordechai's plan? Let's go now to number 16. So when we see in number 16, what does he tell her to do? Pasukhet. What does he command her to do? Because what do we know the relationship is? Who commands and who listens?
Mordechai commands.
Mordechai commands, Esther listens. Right? So what is his suggestion? What should be her role? She should go to Ahasuerus and beg. You go to Ahasuerus, throw yourself down at his feet, and you beg for Am Yisrael. And what does Esther answer? Of course I can't do that. Because what's the rule? If I'm not invited, then I can't go in. And if I go in when I'm not invited, I could be killed. So then, of course, I won't be able to beg. So that's not a good plan. So what does Mordechai answer? That's not a good answer. Don't tell me you can't go. Right? Pasuk Yud Gimel, what does he say to her? Al tadami benafshech. Pasuk Yud Gimel, right? We're number 16, Pasuk Yud Gimel. He says, Al tadami benafshech lihimalet bet hamelech mikol ha-yudim. Don't think you can hide in the castle. Don't think you can hide in the palace from all the Jews. Now, where else? Look at the next pasuk. I brought it from Shmuel Bet, Perek Vav. Where else do we have a queen from the house of Shaul? Her name is Michal, in a palace, looking out at everybody else and separating herself from everybody else. What did Michal Bat Shaul say when David is dancing with everybody, right, and bringing the Aron Brit Hashem to Yerushalayim? How is she looking at him? Right, with
separately.
Right, with disdain, because what does she say? Right, we don't do that. We don't dance with everybody. Right, she's looking from the palace out. She's not joining Am Yisrael. And where's David? He's with the maidservants. He's with all of Am Yisrael. And what does it say? Batidez lo b'libah. She looks down at him, which means we're the king, we're the queen, and everyone is separate. So what is Mordechai almost telling her? Right, and again, because we know in Chazal and in the story itself, the language is look back to see the story. Look back, right, to see the story. So what does he tell her? He says, number one, don't take the Michal route. Don't be like, we always have the generations of Shaul's family. We're on page 3 now. What else does he tell her? Number 18, Pasuk Yudalit. He says, Ima charesh tacharishi ba'et hazot. If you're quiet at this moment, what did we say earlier is the symbol and the hallmark of Shaul and Rachel and that whole line?
Quiet.
Quiet, right? But it's even more, because what does it say about Shaul when he heard everyone criticize him? Vayihi kimacharish. The Pasuk about Shaul in Shmuel is that Vayihi kimacharish, the exact same language. When people were criticizing him, he was quiet, right? He didn't really take it to heart. So what is he telling her? If you're quiet, if you are going to do the same repetitive things that Shaul did, not destroying Amalek, right, not doing Dvar Hashem, right, then what's going to happen? If you stand aside, Hashem will save Bnei Israel, because Hashem always saves Bnei Israel. But your opportunity to redeem yourself and the family name is going to be lost, which means Hashem is going to redeem Am Yisrael. So it's not just, oh, if you don't do it, no one else will do it. He's saying even more. He's saying, you are chosen so far to be the Shaliach. You can step up and really change the destiny of Am Yisrael. Because if you don't, what does he say? Ve'at u'beit avich tovedu. You and your whole family name is going to be destroyed. Which means Shaul HaMelech, who had this second chance to destroy Haman, to destroy Agag, to set the record straight, is not going to be taken advantage of. So you are going to be lost in the annals of history. How do we see the beginning of the Megillah is already showing that Shaul's name is almost erased? How do we see that? Who are the names? What are the names? Who are the people that are mentioned as the background, as the lineage of Mordechai? Who's missing in the equation? Shaul. It says Kish, but but it doesn't say Sha'ul, which means what has already happened, right? Did you ever read literature, right? And the stories are that the names, you know, start to erase from the page because you're, you know, those people are getting lost, right? Very common. So what is already happening to Sha'ul's name? He's almost being lost. So what is Esther's opportunity? Her opportunity is to do a redemption, a tikkun, for all of Bet Sha'ul. And he says, "Umi yodea im la'et kazot higat la'malchut." This is your moment of malchut. Because what do we see the Gemara said? If you are originally, right, slated for kingship, for malchut, what do you always have a chance to do? To reinvigorate that latent koach, that latent opportunity. So he's saying now is your chance. So what do we see flips here? First time, what does it say? Pasuk tedvav, vatomer Esther lahashiv el Mordechai. Right, she now is going to set the tone. She is going to give the message. And what's the first thing she says? Lech knoset kol ayudim, gather everyone together. What did we see when Mordechai was in Avilut? Everyone in their own nation, each one was doing their personal Avilut. Each one was crying out in their own way, separate, thinking the end is near. What is she saying? What's the first thing you have to do for Bnei Yisrael and Galut? Or for Bnei Yisrael to have any kind of hope? What's left? Knoset kol ayudim? Unify them. Achdut. First things first, you have to see all of Bnei Yisrael together. What's the next thing you have to do? The tsumu alai. You have to fast. What do we see about this fast that's so important? What doesn't it come with? All the earlier fasts of Mordechai and Am Yisrael, what did it come with? Avilut, sak va'efer. We don't see that here. She just says you should fast. And here's another interesting aside, right? Before the perek with Amalek, what does Sha'ul tell all of Bnei Israel in the middle of a battle to do? Not to eat. And what does Yonatan, his own son, tell Sha'ul right at the end of that battle? It was a mistake. What did he do? He took his stick and dipped it in the dvash. He ate it and oh, enough. His eyes lit up. Which means, what is Sha'ul's problem as well? What does he know how to regulate? The materialism, the food, right? The tzom. What is Esther showing? I know how to regulate, how to use food in the right way. Because what is all Megillat Esther about? It's about parties, parties, parties. Which means, how do you use materialism in the right way? Which means materialism plays a very big role in our life. But you have to know how to harness it. The idea of the Mishneh early on with Achashverosh is showing that it was just lavish and we don't have any values there. Right? He wants to bring Vashti because he just wants to show how beautiful she is. And when she refuses, he says, off with her head. Right? But we don't see any values there. What we're going to see here is that food and tzom are used in special ways. And what we see Esther is saying, she says, number one, unity. Number two, tzom. Right? And number three, she says, the kasher avadati avadati. She takes responsibility. What are we disappointed with Sha'ul after Mechiyat Amalek? Right? When Shmuel tells him, you didn't do Dvar Hashem, what does Sha'ul say? I did. Right? And Shmuel says, no, you didn't. And what does Sha'ul say? I did. Right? I only saved a little for Dvar Hashem, a little for Korbanot. I only left Agag Melech Amalek. The people made me do it. But really, what does Shmuel keep on telling him? Because of this, what will you lose?
Malchut.
You will lose your Malchut. Because you don't take responsibility. So what is Esther doing here? She takes responsibility. So much so that by Pasuk Yud Zayin, what's happening? Vaya'avor Mordechai, vaya'as. Who's giving the command now?
Esther.
It's Esther Hamamka. Esther is giving, right, the tzibui. So now she is in control. So what is her plan? As we saw earlier, right, Mordechai wants her just to daven, right, and to ask Achashverosh for Rachmanut, right? But she has a different plan. What does she realize? What's her goal? She wants to destroy Haman. Because what did Sha'ul do? He left Agag. And he didn't destroy Amalek. And what is Haman? Ha'agagi. So Esther is seeing it as a personal mission to destroy Haman because she wants to redeem the actions of Sha'ul HaMelech. And that's why she makes the parties. She made two parties. She only invites Achashverosh and Haman because she wants to sow the seeds of jealousy, right? She wants Achashverosh to think Haman wants his job and she wants to give Haman, right, his own noose to kill himself because if he thinks he has a chance for Malchut, a chance to be king, he's going to go for it. Because what do we see about Esav and Amalek? The materialism, the power, right, will blind them and separates them, and they can't think clearly. So what happens, right, at the Mishteh, at the second party, right, Esther is able to say to Achashverosh, right, I want you to destroy Haman because he wants to destroy my people. But what happens, right, that Ahasuerus is so suspicious of Haman. Not only, right, is only Haman invited to the parties, but when Ahasuerus can't sleep, Haman is in his courtyard. And not only is he in his courtyard, what does he say? What does Haman say to Ahasuerus that he should do to someone that he cares about? Put him on the horse, give him the king's clothes, give him the king's crown, give him the scepter, have someone stand before him and say, this is what the king wants to do, right? So what is he pretty much telling Ahasuerus? What do I want?
To be king.
I want to be king. So Esther is the one who masterminded this crazy jealousy between the two, right? And look at 19, because that's what the Gemara says. The Gemara says, Tanu Rabbanan, Mas Marata Esther Shizimna Tamal. What is this whole thing about the parties? What does she want to do with it? So Rabbi Eliezer says, Pachim Tamnalo. She is setting obstacles, right, before Haman, which means he is going to be hoisted on his own petard. He's going to trip himself up because he wants the power, because he wants the money, he can't see straight. And that, we saw, is the third element, the doron, the materialism, the money, that always trips up Esav. So that is what Esther adds, and that's why she is finally able to destroy Haman. So much so that right after the party, what does Ahasuerus ask to be done? That Haman be hung. Afterwards, who's already finished? Who's not interested anymore? Ahasuerus. Chamata melech shachacha. He's already undone, right? But what does Esther realize now? She took care of Haman, but what else does she still have to do? Save the Jewish people, right? So now she does plan B, and whose plan B does she take? Mordechai. Now she's ready to do plan B. So look at the exact language, right? We see it's the structure here. What does she do? Look at number 21. Pasuk Gimel. Vatosef Esther vatidaber lifnei melech. So what does she say more before the king? Vatipol lifnei raglav vatef vatitchanen lo. What does she do now, finally?
Begs.
Now she begs, which means now she's using Mordechai's plan. But she needed her plan first to destroy Haman, and now she begs Ahasuerus. And also what happens? The Jews now are on the rising tide. What can they do? They can't rescind the old decree, but they get a new decree. And look at the language of the new decree. Look at number 22. What can they do? Lahashmid, laharog, ulabet, right? Taf and ashim. And what are the Jews allowed to take? Ushlalam, lavoz. What do we know? If they take the shalal, what would that say about them? They did it for the money. And what are they allowed to do? Kill women and children, everybody. If they kill everybody and the women and children, what does that show? That it's not really a defensive war, and it's not really a principled war. So look at the language that the Megillah uses. The Jews were allowed to kill everybody, women and children and everybody. What were they allowed to take? Also the money. But look at number 23. What do they do in the end, right? It says, right, they get together. They kill in Shushan 300 ish. So what does that mean? Men, right? People who are able to fight. Not only that, it says, ubabizah. Lo shalchu et yadam. And even in all the other nations, Pasuk Yud Zayin, what does it say? Pasuk Tet Zayin, what does it say? Right? La'amod al nafsham. What does it mean, la'amod al nafsham? What do the Jews only do?
Defend
themselves. Right? They defend themselves, and also what don't they take? What does it say again? Ubabiza? Lo shalchu et yadam. Which means to undo Agag, Haman is destroyed. To undo that, Shaul took the biza. Bnei Israel don't take from the Bizah, not only in Shushan, but in everywhere around. And what do they do to celebrate? Mishteve Simcha, right? What is this Mishteve Simcha? The right kind of Mishteve Simcha. Not like the party of Ahasuerus, but real Mishteve Simcha. Because what was the way Esther defeated Haman? With Mishteve Simcha. Number two, what else do we see? What is the way we celebrate? Pasuk Yutet. We celebrate with Simcha u'mishte, right? And what else? Umishloach manot ish l're'ehu, right? We give matanot, because what did we say was so important? What did Esther do that was so special? When everyone was davening, fasting, what does it say? Lech knos et kol ha'yudim. This idea of unity, of the community together, was so important. That's what Purim represents, and that's why, what do we give? Mishloach manot ish l're'ehu. But what did we say in the beginning of the Sheor? What was Esther? A yetoma. What do we know about Purim? Who else do you have to take care of? Not just your friends, right, and your inner circle. What do we also give on Purim? Matanot le'evyonim. We also care about the poor, the people who are underserved, right? Which means Purim is about responsibility. Purim is about stepping up. Purim is about Every single person is chayav b'mishte. Every single person, as we saw, women as well, right? We are chayavot b'mishloach manot. We are chayavot b'matanot la'evyonim, which means every person has a responsibility for the community. And as we saw earlier with the idea that we spoke about Esther as being every woman, it didn't matter. We don't even know her personality originally. But she had going to take, well, she developed in herself this koach in order to save Am Yisrael. Going from this personality, she didn't become the public face. Because who is the public face for Esther, in a sense? Who is the Mishneh LaMelech? Who is the one who's always dressed up in the kingly clothes? Who is the one who gets the ring? Mordechai. And yet, what do we call the Megillah? It is Megillah Esther, because she is the catalyst. It's because of her that we have this nest. And not only that, we celebrate, look at the Pesukim, we celebrate every single year. And also the language that is used, look at Pasuk Lamed Aleph. What Shoresh is used all the time in Pasuk Lamed Aleph? Lekayem, kayem, lekayem. Because what was the criticism of Shaul? What didn't he do? Lokayem v'ashem. And what is Esther and Mordechai, what are they doing, and especially Esther? They're mekaymim dvar Hashem. And not only that, it says, ki yemu v'ki blu hayudim alehem. The symbol of Mordechai and Esther is accepting dvar Hashem. And everyone doing it freely, right, out of free choice. And we end, at least the story part of the Megillah, u'ma'amar Esther kiyam divrei apurim ha'eleh v'nichtav ba'sefer. Right, Esther is the one, right, who really establishes this chag with Mordechai, but it's really her words. We'll finish with the Midrash, number 25. Right, in the Gemara it says, right, Amar Shmuel bar Yehuda, shalcha lahem Esther l'chachamim, kva'uni l'dorot. You have to establish me forever. And what does Rabbi Eliezer say? In Pshat, in the Torah, we have in Shmot and Dvarim, it talks about Amalek. In Navi, where does it talk about Amalek? It says Amalek in what? The story of Shaul. And finally, where's the last time we speak about Amalek? Masha katuv b'mgila, which means k'tov zot zikaron b'sefer, which means the idea of Amalek has a three-part fruition. We have it in Torah, we have it in Navi, and we have it in Ketuvim, which means Esther is the final chapter of destroying Amalek in its physical manifestation, right? Which means Esther really is so important, right, in making sure that her family legacy is continued. She represents and did a tikkun for everything that happened with Beit Shaul, but she is also a tikkun for Am Yisrael, to bringing Geulah la'olam. And by what? By using her special midot. And as we saw earlier, we don't know what they were. I mean, we don't know what her special personality was. But she sees slowly, we see slowly but surely how she develops. And again, as we said earlier, right, we read from the earlier Psukim and Sfarim, we saw how it goes back and forth with the Megillat Esther in the language, but also in the lesson. We see that Megillat Esther is telling us that Esther, with who she was and how she saw her family background, was able to bring redemption in a time where Am Yisrael thought that the end was near. Everyone was in Avilut. But by her cool head, by unifying Am Yisrael, by davening, by tefillah, by using her smarts and diplomacy or understanding how the world works, she was able to change the whole destiny of Am Yisrael. And that's a message for us today. It doesn't matter, right, who we are, what our personalities are. Every one of us has this koach that we have to develop, right, in order to make a difference in the future of Am Yisrael. It could be just in our family, it could be just among our friends, it could just be something small, right? But all that is an aggregate that adds up into something very big. And that's what Megillat Esther tells us. And we know that Nashim are chayavot in all mitzvot of Purim. Every single one, right, women are responsible because afhen ayu boto hanes. And as we saw the view of the Rashbam, ikar hanes, we're the main reason for this nes, right? It's Megillat Esther, it's Ta'anit Esther. And that's also very important, which means we see that, except for this year, but usually, Ta'anit Esther goes into Mishteh, goes into Simchat Purim, because it's the tefillah that really brought about Simchat Purim. And not only that, we are still fasting, usually, just not this year, we're usually fasting when we're really reading the Megillah first time. So Purim is really all about evaluating, seeing what your identity is, as we discussed in the beginning, right? Why does everyone have two names here? Why two identities? Because it is a time to think of who we are, what we stand for, the whole idea of costumes, the whole idea of parties, the whole idea of going from a tzom into chagigah is really to start feeling all those emotions we can't know. Is Baruch Haman, Arur Haman, Baruch Mordechai? What's the point? Which means this is a time to think about your values. Ironically, in a day like Purim, right? How does the world work? What are your goals? How does tefillah really lead two other things. What's our role in being activists and making a difference in our Hishtadlut? How does Hashkachat Hashem, which means so clearly in every single thing here we see Hashkachat Hashem, but how we bring Shefa Hashkachat Hashem into this world? It's our actions. What does Mordechai say to Esther? Revach v'hatzala ya'amod la'yudim mimakom acher, which means Hashem always takes care of things. But what's our job in this world? We should be the messengers. We should be the shlichim to bring tikkun la'olam. We should be the messengers. We should be the individuals with our ideas and with our abilities, whatever they are. We can really make a difference. And that's what Megillat Esther tells us every single year. That's the interpretation. That's where Chazal see Megillat Esther. So I want to give us all a bracha that just like we say, Bizchut Nashim Tzidkaniyot, Shayu Boto Ador Nigalu Bnei Yisrael, right? And it's because of Esther that we have Purim. It's because of the Rashim Tzidkaniyot, right, that we have Arba Kosot Yayin. It's because of the Rashim during the time of Chanukah, and that's why we take a part in all mitzvot that have to do with Pirsumei Nisa and are connected with these mitzvot the Rabbanan. But there's one other element as well. It's telling us not only Bayamim Ahem, but also Bazman Hazeh. Each one of us today has the ability to bring Geula La'olam. And if we each harness whatever koach we have, right, in whatever way that we can really affect the world, we should really do it. And we have the ability. So I want to give everyone a bracha. In the future, we're going to write midrashim. Bizchut nashim tzidkaniyot shel shalavim l'nashim nigal haolam. Chodesh tov.